Time to pick on the husbands. That's what I've been told. Last week we talked about wives, respect your husbands, and we started out with the idea of if the foundations be destroyed, what will the righteous do? And so observing the fact that marriage is God's foundation for the home, for society, for the rearing of children, and ultimately, of course, for righteousness. Marriage is where it all starts. Go and fill the earth with children from marriage. And so everything starts there in terms of building society, building the church, building righteousness throughout the land. So it's almost as if you wish there were more instruction in the scriptures for wives and for husbands. Direct instruction. You have Ephesians chapter 5, verses 22 through 33, which is the most complete section of the New Testament. Paul in Colossians simply has a couple of things to say to wives and to husbands. It's almost as if you wish that there were so much more. But I believe there is. It's just not specific to husbands and wives. It's to Christians, to how we love. There's so much instruction in the scriptures about how to love one another. And every one of those instructions impacts us in our relationship with our spouse. We need to love our wives. Wives need to love and respect their husbands. And so I want to read with you Ephesians chapter 5, verses 22 through 33, just to start things out this morning, and then make some observations with you about the kind of love that is specified in Ephesians 5. Wives, submit to your own husbands as to the Lord, for the husband is the head of the wife, even as Christ is the head of the church, his body, and is himself its Savior. Now, as the church submits to Christ, so also wives should submit in everything to their husbands. We talked a lot about that last week. Husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her. You see the sacrificial love there. That he might sanctify her. You see the purpose, the goal to sanctify her. Justin's comments about us having the same goal, the common goal of getting to heaven. The fathers, husbands need to lead their families in that goal. That's exactly the point that Paul is making here, that he might sanctify her. Christ sanctified the church. He made holy the church so that the church could be presented before him pure and spotless and blameless. And so our goal as husbands is to lead our wives to heaven, to help sanctify her. We'll talk about that a little bit in just a moment. In verse 27, so that he might present the church to himself in splendor without spot or wrinkle or any such thing, that she might be holy and without blemish. In the same way, husbands should love their wives as their own bodies. He who loves his wife loves himself. For no one ever hated his own flesh, but nourishes and cherishes it, just as Christ does the church. We're going to talk some about nourishing and cherishing, the sensitivity that a man has towards the encouragement to his wife, the nourishing and cherishing like Christ does the church, because we are members of his body. Therefore, a man shall leave his father and mother and hold fast to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. He points to the one flesh relationship. So as Christ sacrificed for the body and sanctified the body because we're members of his body, so we as husband and wife are one flesh. We are to look at ourselves that way. And as we help each other, we are helping ourselves. This mystery is profound, and I am saying that it refers to Christ and the church. However, let each one of you love his wife as himself, and let the wife see that she respects her husband. It comes back to the fundamental roles, I think, that we talked about last week. Husbands, love your wives. Well, the husband is the servant leader of the home. The wife is the servant helper. I like those terms. I think they're very helpful. Instead of just calling the husband the leader or the head of his household, how about we add the concept of servanthood into that? Because that's exactly what Christ wants husbands to be, the servant leader. And he wants wives to be the servant helper. And so both are servants. There is no superiority or inferiority in the roles that Christ has assigned. We made that point last week. It's very important. Most people don't understand that who are being taught by the world. They think that there's something inherently inferior in submission. Not so at all. We all submit. In every relationship, there is submission. And we made that point last week. And so the wife is the servant helper. Husband is the servant leader. And husbands need to see themselves that way in order to avoid some of the issues that can come from being the head when they seek to lord over or domineer. I thought this would be good just to point this out first and foremost. It was already made. That point was already made today. We're all supposed to love one another. You look at the emphasis in the scriptures. It's the ultimate goal, Paul said. It's the purpose of the instruction, he said in 1 Timothy 1, verse 5. Jesus said, loving God, loving your neighbor sums up the entire Old Testament law. Jesus said it's the distinguishing mark of the Christian. By this shall all men know that you are my disciples. Paul called it the crowning virtue of all other characteristics that we wear. James called it the royal law to love one another. It sums up, Paul said, the Christian's responsibilities. Everything is summed up in the command, love your neighbor. And so without love, a Christian is nothing, Paul said. You can give your body to be burned. You can have faith as to move mountains, but if you have not love, then you are nothing. And so love, of course, is the preeminent characteristic. It's the first fruit of the Spirit in Galatians chapter 5 that Paul mentions. God is seeking to produce in us love. Love God, love our neighbor. On this, all the law and the prophets depend. So when we think about husbands loving your wives, the first point to make on this, the most obvious point, is that love is a choice of the will to give. It's very important that we understand that's what love is. Love is giving. It's not an emotion, first and foremost. It's not a feeling, first and foremost. It's not something that we necessarily always want to do. It is a choice. Love is a choice to give. John 3 and verse 16, God so loved the world that he gave. Ephesians chapter 5, Christ died for the church. He gave himself for the church. The ultimate love is the gift that Christ gave. And so love is giving, pure and simple. In Luke chapter 6 and verses 27 and 28, how can we be commanded to love our enemies and pray for them? Because it's a choice. It's not an emotion. What kind of a love emotion do you have towards your enemy? Not much. And so love is a choice that we make. And so the point I think that we need to make about this in regard to marriage is fundamental. Couples can learn to love one another because we can learn to give. And that's what we need to focus in on in our marriage. Am I a giver or am I a taker? And when marriages are filled with two givers, like God intends, two servants, like God intends, then the marriage is beautiful. It's like Christ and the church. It's the beauty of that perfect unity and relationship. Now, I realize we're not going to be perfect in our giving always, but striving for that and having that be in the governing atmosphere in our home. When you can say, you know, Dad is a giver. When you can say Mom is a servant, and you mean that with great affection and appreciation and gratitude, that's the atmosphere of the home that God desires. That's when children call their mother blessed. That's when husbands say, many daughters have excelled, many daughters have done well, but you excel them all. And the husband feels that way about his wife because of the great giver that she is, the great servant that she is, and his appreciation. She has learned to give, and he must learn to give in return. He must learn to give first. I think we've had some good lessons on that over the last couple of months. Love first. Daryl preached a lesson on that a few months ago. And so we can learn. Second point to be made is love is an action verb, as is illustrated in 1 John 3, verses 18 and 19. when John said, "My little children, let us not love in word or in tongue, but in deed and in truth. And by this we know that we are of the truth and shall assure our hearts before him." So not, I think he means not in word or in tongue only, but in deed and in truth. So love is an action verb. In fact, all of the definitions of love in 1 Corinthians 13 are verbs. That's interesting. I think there's 15. 15 words there that are used to define love, and every single one of them is a verb, which means love is an action. Love is giving. And so we see in 1 Peter 3 and verse 7 that men are to give honor to their wives. So let's pause there for just a moment. I'd like to make a practical application on that. We love in word and in deed. We give in word and in deed. In 1 Peter 3 and verse 7, Peter says, "Likewise, husbands, live with your wives in an understanding way, showing honor to the woman as the weaker vessel, since they are heirs with you of the grace of life, so that your prayers may not be hindered." Notice the emphasis on showing honor to your wife as the weaker vessel. And we could explore that concept of the weaker vessel. Obviously, it includes the physical. That's the most obvious difference between men and women. Not always the case, but in general, women are weaker than men physically. But I think it goes more than that. I think that there are the nature of women, and men and women are such that men are the providers, they're the protectors. God has placed them as the head. And so there's differences between men and women, that men need to be the provider, men need to be the protector, men need to help. And in so doing, men have a tendency to view women as inferior or as less worthy of their respect. And so you see Peter making the emphasis here to honor her. And so men are challenged in that regard. Men are called upon by God to think and give consideration to how much they are honoring their wives, showing respect to their wives. Love is shown by choosing to honor our wife at all times, even when we disagree or even when we see a fault. Love is honoring our wives in that we speak respectfully toward her, even when we disagree with her or when she's expressing herself in a way that we don't appreciate, or we see emotion in her that undermines our supposed logic and wisdom. And so we have a tendency to look down. We have a tendency to dishonor, to speak disrespectfully to our wives. And so you see Peter making the emphasis, showing her honor here. Another point in 1 Corinthians chapter 7 that I think is worth pointing out. 1 Corinthians chapter 7 verses 3 and 4. And this is just in the area of giving in word or in deed. There's so many other applications we could make. But 1 Corinthians 7, verses 3 and 4 says, "Let the husband..." Let me find my controls here so I can see what I'm looking at. He says, "Let the husband render to his wife the affection due her, and likewise also the wife to her husband. The wife does not have authority over her own body, but the husband does. And likewise, the husband does not have authority over his own body, but the wife does." And so we're talking about the most intimate of all relationships here, the husband and the wife and their union together. And he says that render to your wife the affection due her. Now, granted, in the context, it's a sexual context, but I want to make this point about that. Husbands need to learn that the most intimate affection is just the culmination of other forms of affection. Without other forms of affection, intimacy is hollow. It's lacking beauty and meaning. When a couple is kind and affectionate in the daily course of life, there is a deeply satisfying beauty in their most intimate union. Point being what? Men, you have a tendency, we have a tendency to be less affectionate in the daily course of life than our wife desires. I believe that's true. I believe in general, men tend to be, not all men, and not all women require or appreciate a ton of affection, but in general, women appreciate and enjoy affection from their husband. And men tend to be less affectionate in the daily course of life and more desirous of the most intimate of affection. And the point being there, men, is that we hinder the most intimate aspects of our marriage relationship by failing to be affectionate during the daily course of life. Our wife needs to hear words of affection. Our wife needs to hear kindness from us. Our wife needs a touch from us. Our wife needs to be told that we appreciate her, that she's still the most beautiful woman in the world to us. She needs that affection, generally speaking. And husbands tend to be less affectionate than wives need. And so husbands can learn to give, to render due affection to their wife. I think we think of that, men, only in a sexual sense, but I think we need to look at that on a much wider sense. And we need not to be opposed to that. We need not to be rebellious against that concept, as if we say, I don't think she should need that. That's not our place to say. We're givers. And if our wife needs that affection and that kindness and that touch and that building up and that sentimental, emotional type of relationship that we're less inclined to provide, then we need to learn to give it. Because that's what love does. Love learns to give. And we ought not to be rebellious against those concepts just because we don't like them necessarily or because we don't incline towards them. So just a couple of points to go through here. First of all, the most obvious point in Ephesians 5 is that our love must be a sacrificial love. He gave himself up for the church, and husbands are to love their wives as Christ loved the church. So obviously it must be a sacrificial love. So here's a practical application in regard to that. A selfish, proud, controlling headship will destroy a marriage. And I recognize that you probably wouldn't characterize your headship as selfish, proud, and controlling. But let's take the Darrell principle and let's look at ourselves and see if perhaps we might not be guilty of the very thing we might deny or might say, well, I don't see how they could have ever done that. I would never do that. I would never be a selfish, proud, controlling husband. But headship lends itself to that weakness. And so as husbands, we've got to be aware of that and we've got to be sensitive to that. And we maybe even need to ask our wives a little bit, get a little bit of input on that. Do you feel like I demean you? Do you feel like I condescend to you? Do you feel like I lord over you? Do you feel like I don't listen to you? Do you feel like I make decisions without asking for your input? Do you feel like I boss you around? Do you feel like I have expectations of you that I shouldn't have? And those are the kinds of giving, loving questions that you might ask your wife in order to discern better whether or not you're loving her the way God wants you to love her. Because in leadership positions, there's always that tendency. There's always that temptation. Because you feel that responsibility, sometimes you are insensitive to the fact that you may be lording, you may be condescending, you may be demeaning. And so husbands need to learn to evaluate themselves. Headship is not a tool to use to get our way. I'm the head, I'll make the decision. I'm just saying I want to do it my way. I don't care what you think. That's not love. Matthew 20, Jesus said to the disciples, the Gentiles love to lord it over each other. It shall not be so among you. Even the Son of Man didn't come to be served, but to serve and to give his life a ransom for many. So you can see there is a tendency of leadership to lord over. 1 Peter 5, Peter talked about how elders lead. And how do they lead? By lording over? No, by example. By example. That's a whole different concept, isn't it? Than just telling people how it's going to be. Boy, does leadership lend itself to that weakness. Leaders can fall prey to that very easily. Husbands can fall prey to that in the home. Hebrews 13 and verse 17 requires us to submit to those who have the rule over us. Your wife is required to submit to you, but in that context, he's talking about leaders, elders, serving the church, watching over souls, shepherding, helping, serving. And so they invite submission by their example. They invite submission by their loving leadership and headship. And that's the way God wants it to be in the home. Second of all, it must be a sanctifying love. He sanctified the church. And so relate that to the husband and wife. Do I sanctify my wife? Well, obviously, only the blood of Christ sanctifies us. But the concept there would be the idea of encouraging her, helping her, leading her towards sanctification, meaning holiness, meaning spiritual strength. Is my wife a better Christian and a better person because she's married to me? I wonder how your wife would answer that question. I hope, husbands, it would be yes. Thank God every day for my husband because of the spiritual example that he gives me. And I'm following his lead in terms of my worship and my Bible study and my prayer life. I look to him as my example. That's an awesome thing to be able to say. Or to have said about you. So, a few thoughts. A sanctifying husband will join with you in worship, not hinder you. He'll pray with you. Pray with you. Not avoid spiritual fellowship. Sometimes wives have to drag their husbands into prayer instead of the other way around. I do appreciate my wife for helping me and encouraging me to pray better and to pray more. But I should be the leader in that regard, too. I shouldn't always be hearing from her, "Don't you think we ought to pray?" I should be uttering those words at times, shouldn't I? Support the wife's Bible study, not hinder it. Encourage godly morality, not discourage it. We could go off on a tangent there about husbands and wives working together in the home to encourage godly morality. But we won't. We won't take the time this morning to do that. But that's an important matter for husbands and wives to work together on, to discern godly morality and make choices and decisions in the home that lead toward sanctification. Help relations with friends, in-laws. Learn to be a peacemaker because relationships can have difficulties. In-laws, friends, relatives, in the church, a husband should be leading his wife, sanctifying his wife toward peace in relationships. Let's help each other to learn to love others so that we can have peace in our relationships. Help not hinder our efforts to teach the word. Work with us, not against us, in helping raise godly children. So sanctification, the idea of leading spiritually, helping and encouraging in all these spiritual areas. Husbands have the headship. They have the leadership in that regard. And then there's this concept of nourishing and cherishing in Ephesians chapter 5, verses 28 through 30, that the husband should love their wives as their own bodies. He who loves his wife loves himself. For no one ever hated his own flesh, but nourishes and cherishes it, just as Christ does the church, because we are members of his body. That's an interesting concept. That you love yourself when you nourish and cherish your wife. You get that, don't you, men? You got to be able to see that. And imagine the contrast to that then. And so often is the case where men fail to nourish and cherish their wife, and then they end up complaining about their wife. Their wife isn't what she ought to be. They're always seeing something wrong, something negative. She's not doing what she ought to do. She's not giving me what I... And you know what? You haven't nourished or cherished her. You haven't even loved yourself. You didn't get it. You didn't see it. That giving always comes back 100-fold. Isn't that a biblical principle, a spiritual principle? Give, and it will be given to you. I love that. Boy, it's true, isn't it? And in marriage, there's nothing could be truer than that. If you want your wife to nourish and cherish you, if you want your wife to give to you, husbands, you become the best giver you could possibly be. And you don't expect anything in return, because that's not really giving, is it? Don't expect to be paid back, Jesus said. You just keep giving. And your wife will respond to that. Your wife will become a better giver herself. You nourish and cherish her in the way that will help you ultimately. So I thought we'd spend just a few more minutes looking at a couple of practical concepts about how men can learn to give and become what they ought to become in their marriage in order to nourish and cherish their wives, so that their wives will actually end up giving more to them. That, of course, can't be the primary motivation. The primary motivation must be just to give, to love, because God calls us to do that. But God's promise is that we will be blessed for that. So how do couples learn to love in the first place? Well, we know how to put love into a relationship. We did it before. We did it before we were married. It's how we got married. We act in certain ways to nourish love before marriage, and then we get married. And there's a tendency to quit doing those things that you did before. What did you do before that led you to decide that you loved one another and wanted to get married? Think in those terms. It's a good practical application of maybe the nourishing and cherishing that needs to go on. It needs to continue. You did it, man. You did it, right? You nourished and you cherished your bride before you were married. That's how you got her to love you. That's how she wanted to be with you. You showed her your love, your care, your nourishing. You cherished her. She felt it. She was drawn to you because of that. And it's so easy, I think, to stop doing those things once we get married. Before marriage, the young man sends the girls gifts, flowers, cards. Before marriage, the young lady chooses her clothes, her perfume, her hairstyle deliberately to please him. After marriage, she says, "My girlfriend's like this on me. If he doesn't like it, that's his problem." You know, before marriage, you take the time to listen to her. After marriage, you don't have the time. Or at least that's the way she feels, right? And probably true. You're not listening to me. Before marriage, you showed politeness and respect. You held the door for her. You let her go first. You said please and thank you. What about now? Before marriage, you complimented her hair, her dress. You told her she was pretty. You used expressions of affection. You told her how much she means to you. What about now? You know, those are great practical thoughts to consider. I suspect most of us would agree, most of us would admit, I should say, that we don't do, if we were honest, don't do nearly the things that we used to do before when we were courting our wife. That's too hard. That takes too much. You know, I can't keep that up. Man, that was hard work, winning her. Well, if you love your wife, you're going to keep giving to her. And you're going to give her what... Think about it, though. That's what she needs. That's what attracted her to you. That's what helped
you to fall in love
and her to fall in love with you. Why would you stop doing those things that worked? Is it because it's less important to you now? Is it because she's less important to you now than she was? That can't be so. So think about those terms. She's far more important to you now than she ever was. So why did you stop? So I think those are good thoughts to think about. Then finally, I want to finish with, I found an article, I shared this with the men about 4 years ago. Marriage advice I wish I would have had. A man who wrote this after his wife divorced him. Marriage advice I wish I would have had. And so he's giving this advice from the perspective of a broken heart, looking back at what he lost. And so his first advice is never stop courting her. You nourish and cherish your wife. Never stop dating. Never take that woman for granted. When you asked her to marry you, you promised to be that man who would own her heart and fiercely protect it. And this is the most important and sacred treasure you'll ever be entrusted with. She chose you. Never forget that. And never get lazy in your love. Never stop courting. Always see the best in her. 1 Corinthians 13:7. Love believes all things, hopes all things, bears all things, endures all things. Never see the worst in her. Always see the best in her. Focus on what you love about her. If you focus on what frustrates you, all you will see is reason to be frustrated. If you focus on what you love about her, then you will know without a doubt that you are the luckiest man on the earth to have this woman as your wife. Isn't that true, man? When you focus on what you love about her, you will be grateful for her every day. And you will be motivated to give in return. That's the way God's laws work. Forgive immediately. Colossians 3, 12 and 13 talks about bearing with one another and forgiving one another. So don't let your history hold you hostage. Holding on to past mistakes that either you or she has made is like a heavy anchor on your marriage. It'll hold you back. You can't bring up stuff that was done before and forgiven. You can't keep reminding of past mistakes. I think women have memories better than an elephant. Sometimes they can remember stuff and you've forgotten it completely. You don't even remember the scene or the event or the words or the action or whatever. And they can remember that. Women have to be very careful not to bring up past failures of their husbands. And husbands likewise the same. His advice was be present. What did he mean by that? 1 Peter 3 and verse 7 talks about dwelling with your wife in an understanding way. She needs you present. In other words, you sit off in your side of the house, she sits off in her side of the house over time. That's not good. Sharing together with one another is very important. Give her not only your time, but your focus and your attention. I know sometimes it's difficult to give in that regard. You're tired, you're weary, you come home from work, and sometimes you just want to be left alone, right? Just to recover, or whatever it may be. And you got 3 or 4 kids, and you got your wife, and they're, you know, coming at you full force, right? Be present. Give. Give your time. Let her know that you're there for her, that you're fully with her. Treat her as you would your most valuable client. You give your clients priority. Treat her as your most valuable and important client. Allow her to be sad or upset. That's a good one. For me, anyway. Men tend to be so logical and they want to fix stuff. You know, let me just correct the way you're thinking.
you know.
The wife starts expressing her feelings. Let me just fix that. Let me fix that thought. You know, why are you upset? Oh, let me fix that. You know, I got to be the worst at that. You know, I want to fix it. Let me reason through this with you. Let's get all the information here and sort it out, and we'll logically address the issue and we'll fix it. I guess I'll learn someday. That's not what she needs. That's not what she needs. She knows all the stuff, too, that I'm going to tell her. She already knows it. She just wants some comfort, wants somebody to listen to her, wants to be able to express her emotions, her feelings. I want to fix it. So I've got to learn to give in that regard. Be patient. Be kind. Be there for her. Allow her to be sad or upset. Love suffers long. And don't laugh. It's not suffering. Don't view it as suffering. The idea is that you, because you love your wife, you're willing to help. You're willing to give her what she needs. You're willing to bear with her. You're willing to endure with her. Support her. Help her. Not by fixing it and not by reasoning through it, but by being there to comfort and to listen. I thought this was a good one. All his only point here was, don't take yourself too seriously. You know, a cheerful heart is good medicine. Laugh. If laughter doesn't characterize your marriage, if you don't laugh together, you got to learn to give on that regard. You got to learn. You got to think about that. You got to be cheerful. You got to be full of laughter. You got to be full of joy in your home. That's good medicine. So be a, you know, don't take yourself too seriously. Have some fun. Enjoy. And here's one. Don't be a fool. Well, duh, obviously. But that's good advice. Because men can make mistakes, but they need to watch out for the big ones. There's some big mistakes that men can make. You can think of a few, I'm sure. Financial mistakes. Adultery, you know, being unfaithful, and I'm sure there are others, many others that might come to mind. Don't be a fool. Your wife needs you. Your wife needs your stability. She needs your honesty. She needs your truthfulness. And then I thought this was good as well. Be accountable for your own happiness. As far as it depends on you, Paul said, be at peace with all men. Be accountable for your own happiness. What's the natural inclination when we're not happy? We're going to blame someone. And usually at home, who's it going to be? The wife. The kids aren't what they ought to be. You know, they're not doing what they ought to do. Dinner hadn't been served the way I thought it should be. The house isn't clean like I thought it should be. Whatever it may be that men will find frustrating. They need to be accountable for their own happiness. What your wife does or does not give you right to blame her for your bad attitude or for your ingratitude or for your complaining. And then his last one, that comes from a broken heart. Choose love. Always choose love. Always. Choose love. What else matters? Your wife is your precious gift, husbands. Choose love and learn to love and learn to give. And then we will find that we will have a satisfying love. I speak concerning Christ in the church, he says. This mystery is great. The satisfying love of Christ in the church. God wants us to have that in our marriage. And so Ecclesiastes 9 and verse 9, enjoy life with the wife whom you love all the days of your vain life that he has given you under the sun, because that is your portion in life. I'll close there this morning. Make mention, though, that someone mentioned last week, you know, talk to the wives, talk to the husbands. What about us single folks? I said, well, I frankly have only heard one lesson on that in my entire life, and it was 35 years ago. So apparently you single folks have been overlooked, perhaps. But maybe there's some things to say as well. And I think if we do talk about that, single folks, it will probably be along the lines of serving. Don't you think? Serving. So maybe that's a concept you can think about and take away from this lesson. We've been talking about that the last couple of weeks with husbands and wives, but the same principles apply in our service to one another. Appreciate your good attention this morning. You may be here this morning and not yet a Christian, and we're always ready to help with that. We want to study with you first and foremost, because you need to know the true gospel. What does God want you to do to be saved from your sins? You want to be sure about that. You don't want any doubt whatsoever. And so I would be glad to study with you on that. Or if you'd like the prayers of the congregation, we invite you to come.